Hello and welcome to Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing early on Wednesday morning. Joining me from just down the street from where I am in New York City, Tim Bontemps, who's headed to Philadelphia on Wednesday to see the play-in game between the Miami Heat and Philadelphia 76ers. Hello, Timothy.
Hello, everybody.
Join us from Dallas, Texas, where we're getting ready for the game one this weekend between, actually, it's going to be in LA, right, for game one, McMahon?
That's correct.
The Mavericks traveling out to see the Clippers for game one, and what could be one of the great series of the first round. It's Bam McMahon.
Game one, round three of Mavs Clips should be a fun one. Howdy, partners.
Well, round two of Kings Warriors is over. Terrific performance. Game just ended a few minutes ago with the Kings eliminating the Golden State Warriors by, I think it was 26 points, give or take.
Won by 24 to make it official.
Yeah, you're right. A great performance overall by the Kings in this game on their home court. Got great shooting from Keegan Murray, made 8 threes. Really good defense from Keon Ellis. They had a very aggressive game plan against Steph Curry. Steph had a, you know, not a great night. It wasn't terrible. He turned the ball over 6 times, but he turns the ball over. And what will be the headline probably is Klay Thompson going 0 of 10 and scoreless, 0 of 6 from 3-point range. A very much of a whimper for the Warriors, who did have high hopes coming into this game. They knew it was going to be a challenge going into Sacramento. Obviously, it's a hard place to play, although they won a couple of games in the playoffs there last year, including game 7. You know, in listening to Steve Kerr and Steph Curry talk about where they thought the team was going into the week, I think that they had some optimism. I know that everybody and their brother, especially at the network we work at, is going to have a tombstone out for RIP Warriors Dynasty. Yeah, this was not a championship team. We know. We've known for some time it was not a championship team. Last year, they weren't a championship team. They didn't play like a championship team all year. But I do think that this team did have some stuff going for it. They just played a very bad game and ran into an opponent who played a very good game. And the consequence for messing around in December and January, the consequence for Draymond Green missing 20 games this year for suspensions,
is that
you don't get a margin for error.
And so this is the finding out part tonight.
That's right.
Well said.
And look, they call him Game 6 Klay. Nobody's ever called him Playing Game Klay.
Well, they won't
going forward either.
There's going to be a lot of talk about Klay Thompson because he went over 10 in what could be his final game as a Warrior. This night is Draymond Green's fault. And this season is Draymond Green's fault. If you want to say, why are the Warriors losing today?
Some people
it's all
think
his
last
fault.
Season was Draymond Green's fault, by the
way.
Well,
listen, this team has dealt with his nonsense for a long time and has excused it over and over again, as we all know, for years. When he played this year, they were 33-22. When he didn't, they were 13-14. They went 10-11 in the 21 games he missed with two suspensions and whatever they called the like return to play process after he came back. If they win 3 of those games, they're not in the play-in. They're the 5th or 6th seed, might be higher. We're not even talking about them today. So this is why the idea of the Lakers sitting out the game today to get in a one-game scenario, to get in the playoffs was insane, because you could have a game where the other
team
gets hot.
That's actually exactly what Darvin Ham said. He said whoever said that was in the asylum.
Yeah, and he was correct, because if you get in one game where one team shoots the ball really well and your guys miss a ton of shots, I mean, Klay Thompson missed several wide-open shots.
Like, no, you got to get up for these playing games. Got to get up.
I mean, listen, you might have a bad game sometimes. And like, if you put yourself in a one game scenario where your whole season's on the line, this is what can happen. But this whole season for the Warriors comes down to Draymond Green and what he put the team through. And watching that game, they looked exhausted. And Steph Curry has looked exhausted for weeks. He has not shot the ball well for weeks. Yeah. He's still obviously a really good player. But watching him tonight, he looked gassed. And for all of Steph Curry's career, that's the one thing he's always been, is the most conditioned guy on the court. He's always flying around. He's always moving faster than everybody else. He never looks tired. And he looked exhausted. That's because he's in his mid-30s. And that's because I think he has had to shepherd this team through a whole ton of stuff while they have basically nobody else who can do anything with the ball. And so they obviously have some big existential questions to answer. But the reason that we're talking about them being done is because of everything Draymond Green has put them.
Yeah, and still for his career, Draymond Green is on the right side of the pain in the ass to production ratio. But
for sure,
this year, you know, even last year, drastically on the wrong side. And the, you know, the other thing is, as these guys have aged, they have lost the margin for error. So before a lot of Draymond stuff, and the suspensions obviously weren't as long before, but before a lot of the chaos, you could overcome that because they were so damn good. And now they're just pretty good. And pretty good, plus a bunch of chaos, leads to messiness where you're having to scramble just to, you know, I mean, for dude, it was a few weeks left in the season, and we weren't even certain they're going to be a play-in team. You know, the Rockets faded, obviously, but there was some question there. I tell you what, though, man, this Clay thing is a bummer. I mean, if he fell out of his boat tonight, I'm not sure he could have hit the water. This was rough, rough deal. And it, like, you're sitting there watching in the fourth quarter, and it's, you know, and I kept on waiting. Like, they're going to really, there's at least going to be a comeback mounted here, right? Maybe not completed, but at least there's going to be some drama down the stretch, right? No. And man, he had a couple good looks in the fourth quarter, just didn't go in. And then I tell you who did really enjoy the night, and it's a former Warriors champion who absolutely loved this night, old Harrison Barnes.
Harrison Barnes, baby.
Hitting three threes. You know, this was not his last series with the Warriors. If he got a good, clean look at a three tonight, that thing was splashing. I guarantee you, he is too diplomatic to say it.
Yeah, he's a total class guy.
I guarantee you that HB really enjoyed his role in potentially putting a dagger in this dynasty.
Game high plus 29 for Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not ready, and I have to do a bunch of TV tomorrow, so I'm not ready to
like music. Here we go. Go on.
I'm not ready to do this death of the dynasty thing. I'm just
It's been over for a while. You were the one all year saying, "Well, hey, I'm not going to put this team away. I'm not going to say this. I'm not going to say that."
And I wasn't wrong. They went 27-12.
You were wrong because they were not that good all year, which is fine. Like, they're a fine team. A fine team. They're not that, like, but that's the thing. Both things can be true. They're not a championship level team.
Sure.
And they're not awful.
But
they're fine.
And the question now is not, hey, you know, can the Warriors come back and win a championship again with this core?
Well, that will be the question that I'm asking.
But the answer to that is no. So that's a pretty good conversation. The question is, will this core continue to be together? And obviously, specifically, will Klay Thompson be back with the Warriors next season? And obviously, it would be at a significantly reduced salary. Also, I think it goes without stating that this does not exactly boost his value entering free agency. Not that people are going to knee-jerk too much to one game, but man. And so that's the question. You know, it's been stated on the record by the Light Years check writer himself that they're going to try to duck under the luxury tax. That's slashing a whole bunch of salary. You know, we can start with CP3's $30 million. By the way, I'm not sure what the future holds for CP3, but he was CP3 points tonight.
Three more than Clay.
Well,
look, his career. I mean, we might have saw Chris Paul play his last game. I assume he'll probably play next year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
He could have. I don't know.
I believe he will be somewhere. Getting way off track. San Antonio might be an interesting spot. But anyways, that's a discussion.
Let me just say something real quick about Clay. Okay. We all agree he's not the guy he was 4 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. I guess he first had the injury in 20. So, he's not the same player. Okay. We all agree with that. But let me just say he averaged 18. He played 77 games this year. Okay.
Yeah.
He averaged 18 points. He shot 39% on threes on 9 a game. I know that that's not.
No, he's a good player.
That's pretty damn good.
He's a good player.
He led the league in free throw percentage. Now, for the first time in his career, by the way, he edged Steph by like a thousandth of a point or whatever. I know he's not what he was defensively, but this guy's not cooked.
No, he would be a phenomenal addition for a good team on the mid-level. But obviously, well,
look, even if he signs the same contract Grayson Allen just signed, if he's playing for 18 to 20 a year, He's a good NBA player. He's just not a max player worth twice that.
And he won't get the max from anybody. And I think he'll stay right there because you say you got to cut salary, and absolutely. So it's a non-guaranteed salary for Chris Paul. It's, I think it's just under 31. Clay's making 43. If he comes down to 18 to 20, you're
that's 50 million right there.
You're knocking off 25-ish. Like, I mean, that it doesn't take like, you know, oh my God, break it up into 1,000 pieces, it's over. They are home. And at the end of the day, if you were somebody who decided in January 20th that the Warriors were done and you'd made a big declaration that they're over, I guess you can take a victory lap. Congrats. Like I said, for the last 39 games of the season, they went 27-12. I know it doesn't matter now, but
27-13 now, but yes.
Oh, well, this game didn't
And again, they wouldn't be in the play-in if not for Draymond Green's nonsense,
I understand, but if you want to look at this team and say, boy, what a pile of slop, then I can't help you.
No, well, and even saying they're a 10 seed.
Let's just get past that.
They're a 10 seed. Like, look, they, you know, if they're in the East, they're whatever. I got to look at the standings, but they're
that doesn't matter because they're not in the East.
I'm saying they're a pretty good team that is ridiculously expensive. And, you know, that gets back to the Clay discussion. That gets back to, you know, CP3 does come back to Golden State. It sure as heck ain't for the $30.8 million in non-guaranteed salary that he has on the last year of his contract. But, you know, Bobby Marks just tweeted it. Golden State spent $382.5 million on this roster between salary and tax. $382.5 million to be a lottery team that is shipping your pick to Portland.
Yeah, it's bad.
Well,
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the price of what they've done for a long time when they've had an incredible run. I would rather shift this forward to what does this team need to do outside of the Clay question? And when you watch this team play, what they're crying out for is somebody else besides Steph Curry who can do stuff with the ball. Because their whole team is Steph Curry having to create everything on offense because they don't have anybody that's really a reliable player to score off the dribble outside of him. And that is a huge indictment on Andrew Wiggins, who we haven't talked about at all, who was terrible today, who has been terrible all season, averaged 13 points a game, shot 35% from three, has just not been good. And you want to go back to what has been the reason the Warriors overall, outside of the Draymond nonsense, have disappointed over the past 18 months? Andrew Wiggins hasn't been very good. And you go back to the finals in 22, he might have been the second best player on the court for the final few games of that series. And he has not been close to that guy since then. And this was the guy who, in his prime years, was supposed to look like he was emerging into the guy, but he thought he could be and would be the guy to help sort of be a bridge. And he's just been far short of that. And it's really been apparent as this has played out. And by the way, tonight, we haven't even mentioned his name yet. Keegan Murray, playing the same position on the other side, had a monster game, hit a ton of threes, was guarding Steph, playing great, huge moment for him. And that was the difference really in the game overall in the competitive portion. The Kings' third guy, Keegan Murray, was awesome. And nobody besides Steph could do anything for the Warriors.
And I don't know what you do about Andrew Wiggins because clearly the title season is the outlier in his career. I mean, he was a disappointment.
Three more years, $85-ish million left.
Yeah.
A lot of money.
I don't know what you do about that. I mean, he is not positive or even like a neutral trade value right now. So
well, they've got four young players that are promising.
Yep.
In the two rookies, Jackson Davis and Pajemski, Moses Moody and Jonathan Kuminga. Those are four young players you can work with. Steph is still a high quality player. Clay is still a quality player. And when Draymond stays on the court, he's still a positive difference maker. So I don't foresee this team breaking into 100 pieces. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. I don't see it. I'm sure they will be looking at retrofitting some of the roster. I don't think there's a market for Wiggins to be traded. They've dipped their toe a little bit in trade talks. They obviously had some sort of flirtation with LeBron. I don't think that'll be revisited, but they obviously, we talked about the time when they looked at that move, they obviously were kind of admitting that their team wasn't where they needed to be. And so I'm not sure if they go back to big game hunting, but remember, when if they're able to cut their payroll down, they will get access to normal trade rules again. They will get access to the exceptions. Like, they potentially can get themselves in a position where they're a little bit more maneuverable with what they can do than when they're a second apron team like they were.
Well, you go back to last year, like, they had Dante DiVincenzo on the team and couldn't keep him. You know who this team could really use? Dante DiVincenzo, a guy who has some juice with the ball, who can make plays defensively. Like, that's the kind of guy on the perimeter they don't really have. And it just, you could see it in this game. Steph just had so big of a load to carry. A lot of the time he was out there, Sacramento was just throwing two or three guys at him. Keon Ellis had a great game, but they could throw two or three guys at him because there was nobody else on the court they had to worry about guarding. And like, that's the thing they have to change with their roster.
Look, Clay typically would make two out of every five threes. Today he made.
But even besides that, though, they need somebody else who can attack defense.
No, I understand
that.
He's shown some glimpses. He has some potential there. He obviously, I think he's going to be.
He's a really good young player for sure.
You know, and look, they got way more than they could possibly have expected from their rookies this year, from a non-lottery first rounder. And then Trayce Jackson-Davis, like, tonight was a bit big for him, but the 57th overall pick being a nightly contributor, that doesn't happen. So
solid starting center.
Yeah, and that way.
I think he went 9-2 in the 11 starts that he made down the stretch.
He's a solid player. They've done, I mean, those are two good picks on like Dunleavy. This whole thing isn't hopeless. Like, well, I agree with your premise on that.
Look, there's nothing wrong or nothing to be ashamed if this group and I'm talking about the core of the dynasty, stays together and is competitive as they grow old, but not contenders. There's nothing totally shameful about that. There's nothing wrong with that. It, to me, there is something to be said for, you know, three guys who are four-time champions spending their whole career with one franchise. That has meaning. That has certainly sentimental value. The only thing is, you can't be the most expensive team in the history of basketball and, you know, just be pretty good. So, the only thing that's really out of whack here, there was a couple things. The Draymond pain in the ass to production ratio is out of whack this year. And then the payroll, you know, even if they're a team that got bounced in the first round, like their payroll is just, they were paying for past success.
But that's over now because they're not going to be there anymore.
Yeah. Well, Steve Kerr is going through his post-game press conference right now, and he said that the team desperately wants Klay Thompson back, that he's got good years left. He also said he wanted Chris Paul back, and he still thinks that those guys can be part of a championship team. I mean, I don't know what he's supposed to say, but I do think the Klay part is a fair statement.
It would suck if Klay Thompson is on another team. Like, I really hope, as a basketball fan, like you said, McMahon, like, yeah, there's the whole Danny Ainge thing that the Celtics should have traded Larry Bird and those guys. But, like, it would suck if any of those guys finish their career somewhere else. If they choose to, it's their choice. That's fine. But
it's like when you see a picture of Hakeem Olajuwon in a Raptors jersey. Like, it just ain't right.
Right. Or Patrick Ewing on the Sonics or any of that stuff. Like, it wouldn't feel good if it goes that way.
Yeah. It was I will say this, it was a real positive step for the Kings. They've had really kind of a rocky last 3 weeks with the injuries and then losing their position, a tough loss that they had last Friday against the Suns, which actually put them into this play-in game. And it was a good moment for them after what's been, like, you know, just a step back season. And, you know, De'Aaron Fox brought his little kid out and had him in the him or her, you know, just anyway, in the post-game interview, and it was really cute. And so it's a nice moment for them. And now they're going to get in a plane tomorrow and fly to New Orleans because the Pelicans were victorious in the other play-in game on Tuesday night.
Losers.
And
They were.
Did I say victorious?
He did.
They were victorious in getting a home game for the second play-in game.
This would be a good time for a Winnie Sleep update.
Yeah. They were defeated by the Los Angeles Lakers by 4 points.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish.
shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
While everybody is going to throw the dirt on the Warriors and announce the end of the dynasty and whatever, the basketball tragedy that happened on Tuesday night happened in New Orleans, where Zion Williamson was having the game of his career. We have ripped him for not rising to the occasion, which remains true. He had to sit around for 2 days and feel it again after an absolute egg that he and the Pelicans laid on Sunday to the Lakers. And Zion Williamson was dominating the fourth quarter of this game.
The entire game. He kept the Pelicans in the game when Brandon Ingram had nothing and got benched in the fourth quarter.
As did C.J. McCollum, who was awful.
Yeah, C.J. McCollum, not to have ESPN on ESPN Prime here, but he stunk it up. And Zion was the only reason the Pelicans stayed even remotely within striking distance the whole game. Absolutely took over the fourth quarter. And he did everything we asked.
He was dominating LeBron in the fourth quarter.
And Anthony Davis, both of them.
Yeah.
He was going by Anthony Davis, who I voted third on my Defensive Player of the Year ballot earlier today, and first team all defense. He was going by him like he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Like, and he was amazing.
He was in attack mode all night. He was, and not just with the ball in his hands, you know, 11 rebounds. I mean, he was, you know, everything we asked him to be: dominate, take over games, be aggressive, impact the games. And you know, even when you don't have the ball in your hands, he did all that stuff until 3 minutes and change left, right after he attacked the basket to get to 40 points. And then gave that grimace and looked at the bench and said, I got to go.
Second he landed, you knew he was leaving the game. He immediately stopped. He immediately put his head down. He immediately grimaced. It sucked. And I was on delay. I was catching up because I was a little delayed and couldn't watch live from the beginning. And I was like, holy cow, this is incredible. This guy is destroying. I didn't know what the result of the game was going to be, but I was like, man, this is like, I was getting excited watching. I was like you said, this was everything we've talked about wanting to see from this guy. On the biggest stage, playing against LeBron, the same
crowd,
team that dominated
the crowd
them Sunday.
Was going crazy.
Crowd's going crazy. And
Jose
and then it
Alvarado
just all went
was
away.
Making all these tremendous plays. It was like, you know, exactly what they thought this team could be. Trey Murphy was raining in threes. And, you know, they were going to win the game, right?
I wouldn't go that far. It was a tie game. They might have won the game.
LeBron was 6 of 20 in this game. AD was 6 of 16. LeBron was looking, frankly, LeBron was looking old in this game.
He definitely, what was he, like 1 of 8 in the fourth quarter or something like that?
He looked very tired. Look, he took on the assignment of guarding Zion Williamson the whole game for a second straight game, and he looked like he was taking a price for doing it.
Well, he also took a charge on Zion, and as
took
big
charges,
strong as LeBron is, like, dude, well, I think one was on Zion.
Okay.
Anyways, even if you're 6'9", 270 or whatever LeBron is, taking a charge on Zion, he felt that.
Sure did.
He felt it on impact, and he felt it on the fall. And Zion was so by far the best player on the floor. Like, it was not even funny. And it's like the story of his career. So much to get excited about. Then he's got to leave the floor.
It was it was just a perfect microcosm of his career, which sucks because it looked like it was the moment he finally had arrived for 45 minutes. And then it all came crashing down. And I mean, we'll see if he plays on Friday. If you see a guy leave a game with a muscle injury,
yeah,
it's hard to assume he's going to play on Friday.
I hate to always go back to Luka on the superstar injury comps.
Yeah.
If I'm going to provide any hope, Luka left the game with hamstring tightness against the Warriors recently, and he missed one game, and then he was back, and like he never missed anything. Now, typically, hamstrings aren't that kind, and we all know Zion's history with Andy. So,
well, he's had hamstring injuries before, and it pretty clearly looked like he knew exactly what he did. Mm-hmm. Because he immediately pointed to it, as Bontemps said, called to leave the game, and then immediately went to the locker room and was furious because he knew exactly what had happened. It was a familiar feeling. And I think before he had his issues with his right leg, the knee injury and the hamstring injury, and I think he had the quad or a calf injury. I think those were on his right leg. This is on his left leg. So,
I mean, he really is, and you know, he obviously had to play his way and diet his way into decent shape this year. The difference,
yeah, he looked great.
Between him now and him at the in-season tournament is
striking. Night and day.
Yep. But he is just such a freak of physics that staying healthy, I don't know, man. Like, bodies that big, we've never seen a body that big and that wide move with that sort of explosiveness. And unfortunately, I think it's just from a scientific standpoint, and I think I probably got a C or a D in physics at one point, so I'm certainly qualified to talk about this. It just doesn't seem to work from a health standpoint.
Well, he also jumps off 2 feet, which enables him to be extraordinarily explosive, but can increase your injury risk. And the thing about it is that Brandon Ingram looked terrible in this game. He was 4 of 12. And like you mentioned, he basically got benched.
Mm-hmm. Not basically. He got benched.
I mean, he didn't even come back in when Zion left.
No, and he didn't. I don't think he talked to reporters after the game. I think he dressed and bolted.
CJ was awful.
CJ was 1 of 9 on threes.
I mean, they benched him for Jose Alvarado. He only came back.
Well, Jose Alvarado was playing great.
Well, I know, but he also shouldn't have been out there anyway. The second he came out there, the game immediately turned the other way. I mean, he was really bad. And look, those are their two highest paid players. Those guys are making a combined $70 million, and they were awful. And like, if you're, you know, if Zion can't play on Friday, I think the Kings are going to win. And if the Kings don't win, it's those two guys are going to have to, or if the Pelicans are going to win, those two guys have to be way better if Zion can't play. Because this team already struggles to score sometimes because they don't have a lot of guys who are going to be explosive from the perimeter. Brandon Ingram is more of a mid-range tough shot guy than a guy who's going to light it up from three. So like CJ's got to have a good shooting game. Trey Murphy's got to get up a bunch of threes. Like they're going to have to hit shots because, I mean, again, like you said, McMahon, the only reason they were in this game was because Zion was dragging them along. And then they had this lineup out there of guys who were just being ferocious on defense and making life difficult on the Lakers on the other end.
And obviously Ingram's not right. Whatever happens Friday night, I do think there's clear questions about – it's always been not a great fit, and they've kind of tried to make the most of it. You know, at some point, I think we're going to have – the Pelicans are going to have to figure out, do you want to continue kind of making the best of a weird fit, or do you want to try to find a better fit?
Well, it's going to come this summer, which we don't need to get too far ahead, but he's got 1 year left on his deal. So this is the time to have that discussion.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't extend. They wanted to extend him last summer. He didn't extend because I think he was hoping that he could make all NBA and be Supermax eligible. Well, that obviously didn't happen. So we'll see. I mean, they do need to extend him. He is an important player for them. So,
or trade him.
But this, but this is the stress max. This is a classic case of the stress max.
He's not a max player.
This is why it's stressful. This is one of the reasons why it's stressful, because a guy who's a 25% max player isn't always a 30% max player, 30% of the cap max player 5 years later. you know, and very rarely do you see contracts negotiated where a guy's, you know, gets 90% of the max, you know, most of the time, if they're close, they get it, especially if you're worried about being on a small market like they are. And, you know, that's, he's headed for a classic stress max zone. And with the rules and the fact that the Pelicans have never paid the tax ever, and that they owe Zion this money, and, you know, Trey Murphy is lined up to get an extension this summer.
And they owe CJ this money. I mean, that extension is not looking great.
And so they can't just, you know, it's just, it's hard to just give it to them. So it's a stress, it's a classic stress max situation.
And by the way, real quick, because it's sort of been forgotten, the egg on Sunday, obviously, is they're paying the price for it now, right? If they show up and get that one on Sunday, and Zion plays the way he did today, and they win that game, obviously not playing this game, right? And like that, if they end up losing Friday and they fall out of the playoffs after coming close to winning 50 games and everything we talked about, Zion actually having a healthy season, all that stuff, man, that is going to be one long summer in New Orleans.
I do want to mention D'Angelo Russell, who was tremendous in this game for the Lakers. Made 5 out of 11 threes, had a huge three-pointer from the corner in the final minute of the game that pushed it from a one-point to a four-point lead and gave the Lakers the leverage down the stretch when it became a free-throw game. He was enormous in a spot where the Lakers needed him, and he gets maligned at times and fairly at times. He's had a great second half of the season, and he, you know, and I do mean great, for his standards. And he had an excellent performance in this one on the road under pressure on a night when LeBron was worn down and where AD, you know, AD had an impactful game, but was not great. He was 6 of 16. He, you know, had that back injury on the foul from Larry Nance the other night. He was questionable coming in. Obviously he was going to play. It was a play-in game.
Buzzer made incredible. His shot is just gone. And I voted him 13th All NBA. He's had a great year, but it, like, anytime he takes a jumper, I always expect him to miss at this point. And like, he didn't he used to be a decent, even mid range jump shooter. And like, it's just totally abandoned him at this point.
He was on my All NBA team and my All defensive team as well. He did have 15 rebounds and he had a huge offensive rebound on a LeBron, late. A very weak LeBron miss late. And then he got fouled on the play. And then he stepped up and made both free throws. Mm-hmm. So the Lakers have to be, you know, they're going to be significant underdogs to Denver. I don't know if ESPN bet put it out there.
Not at our employer, I'm sure. Not at our employer.
Well, I got into it with Shannon Sharp and Stephen A. today about.
Oh, I saw that.
The Lakers. I mean,
you're going to regret those words.
Yeah, I mean, he said that the Thunder were the weakest number one. I don't know what he said. The weakest number one seed.
Yes, I'm just playing. I know.
Yeah, I mean, that was a layup. I mean, even if the Thunder get upset, I'm not. You know, they are not a weak number one seed.
Tomorrow you'll get to hear the case for how the Lakers are. Or today you'll get to hear the case for how the Lakers are going to win and shock the world against Denver. So there you go.
Well, he also
said, win an A game.
He also said that the Nuggets lost the game to the Spurs last Friday on purpose.
Oh, yeah, certainly. That's why Joker and Jamal Murray played a ton of minutes in that game. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Makes total sense. Anyway.
Listen, they got in, though. They did get in. And look, I will say this. If you are the Lakers, to me, I mean, set aside all this nonsense about you should tank out or whatever. I do think the best chance for the Lakers to beat Denver, if they're going to, I don't think they're going to win the series, to be clear. But you saw how tired LeBron looked today.
Absolutely.
Their best chance to beat the best team is if they can summon it right now and play them. And LeBron has the energy to get through it. Now, again, I'm picking Denver to win the series. I don't think it's going to be that competitive.
And how many games?
I want to say 4, but I'll probably say 5 because Denver will probably give one away in LA. But I do think if you're the Lakers and you're going to have to play them at some point, I'd rather play them now than in 6 weeks, because I don't think they'll have the energy to beat him in 6 weeks.
The other
thing
is, the number one thing with the Lakers is the health of AD and LeBron.
Yeah.
And the first round, you're going to have more rest in there.
Yeah, it's the longest one. Conference finals every other day.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, like, oh, they got a great shot. Like, it's going to be uphill. It's going to be super uphill battle. But I like their position in the first round better than I like it in the conference finals. And my point is, if you're the Lakers and you're trying to win the whole thing, you know, this is not the Magic. This is not the Cavs trying to win a playoff series for the first time in decade plus.
Oh, they're that's not enough for the Cavs, Dom.
Oh, the Cavs trying to win a playoff series the first time in a decade plus. We're just a LeBron erasure.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, without LeBron, I've said it so many times.
Certain guy might have had something to do with. Some
I know. I've said it. I've said
time.
It so many times that it falls in my head. But they haven't won a series without LeBron since the '90s. So their reality and what they're achieving is different from the Lakers, you know? So, and the same with Orlando. Orlando hasn't won a playoff series since Dwight Howard. So, like, that's not the same. So the Lakers, if they're going to do anything, they got to be Denver, whether you survive for a month longer or not. I know that makes you feel better, and it may make for higher ratings in the interim, but you know, it doesn't really change the reality.
Yeah,
it helps our 401k, but that's about it.
Listen, it goes back to the discussion we had the other day. The idea that it's like better to win a round, like the goal is to win the whole thing. Like that's the goal. The goal isn't to like win a round and then, hey, we have a parade because we won a round. Like that's not the point.
No. There are places where they might. Let's be honest.
I'm not saying you shouldn't celebrate winning a round in the playoffs. Hey,
if Minnesota wins a round, I mean, they had a play-in title parade. They might have a round party.
Yes.
But Minnesota, the Lakers left Minnesota a long, long time ago.
Yes.
Talking about the Lakers here.
Yes. I am playoff series victories should be celebrated because they are hard to do. I'm not saying that, but it's also not the end goal here. And like setting your whole season up to then win a playoff series, it's not, certainly not what LeBron's trying to do approaching his 40th birthday. It's not worried about winning a first round series.
If the Wolves have a first round victory party, do A-Rod and his old pals have to pick up 36% of the check?
They have to pick up 36% of the check, but they have to watch it from the stands. They're not going to be allowed to take part in it.
They'll have it in their fancy room, but they're not allowed in anymore.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Speaking of teams with high expectations, I want to talk about the Bucks for a couple minutes here. So Woj reported on Tuesday that Giannis is not going to be ready to start the playoff series, which begins on Saturday against the Pacers. Now, it was Tuesday morning when Woj reported this, 3 days away from the game. And they already know that he's not going to be ready. You know, typically in a situation with the star player, you're like, you know, round the clock treatment, you know, let's see how he feels on Thursday. Let's see if he can do anything in practice on Friday. Maybe he can like go test it out on Saturday pregame. No, whatever they were seeing, they're like, no chance. And so that is definitely worrisome. And look, we'll get the schedule soon and we'll see if there's a couple of days in between some of those games. You know, sometimes in the first round, you can play just two games over the course of like 5 or 6 days. But like the Bucks are up against it now.
I got some breaking news here for you, fellas.
I'm looking at the West schedule. You got an East one?
We got all the games. So the Milwaukee Bucks play Sunday, Tuesday, then Friday and Sunday. Oh. That's the first four games of their series.
I probably won't get to watch any of those because they're the exact same days as Mavs and Clippers.
Lined up with you. Yeah.
Well, Sunday, Tuesday isn't, I thought they started Saturday, but Sunday, Tuesday isn't great. So they already know he's out Sunday.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Sunday, Tuesday is not, does, I don't like the chance on Tuesday.
To me, the biggest injury question in this series is not Giannis. Obviously, the Giannis thing is critical, but it's, can Tyrese Haliburton by Sunday look more like the guy he was before he got hurt than the guy he's been in the last couple months? Because if they can, if that, this time off allows him to get some of the burst back and he looks like that guy again, I think the Bucks might lose this series whether Giannis is healthy or not because of how well the Pacers match up with them and the fact that the Bucks are probably going to have to win track meets and the Pacers are better at track meets.
Well, and
part of why that series went the way it did in the regular season.
And Dame has been banged up and not playing well for a little while here.
Yep.
You know, I mean.
I mean, they tried, like we talked about the other day, they tried to win the game Sunday against Orlando and they couldn't do it. I know Giannis wasn't playing, but they were trying to win that game. Everybody saw the final score and thought they just tanked it. They weren't tanking it. They got smoked.
Dame played 30 minutes, was 2 of 14 from the floor.
I mean, yeah, he couldn't last, get anywhere.
Last five games, Dame's shooting 28% on threes. Small sample size, but not exactly coming into the postseason on a high.
Now, the
nice
thing is you are playing the NBA version of a ball rack at times in the Indiana Pacers defense, and that could maybe get him going a little bit.
Although the Pacers defense, I'm not saying they're, you know, suddenly stoppers or anything, but since the Siakam trade, it is a significantly better defense. Now, significantly better than historically horrible, but they have not been a terrible defensive team since they traded for Siakam.
Yeah, it was surprising news on the Giannis front there. And I don't know what to say, because if the Bucks lose in the first round, Bontemps, you have articulated that they are under, I agree with you. I think they're under the most pressure of any team in this postseason. I mean, the Clippers are up there. I think the Suns are up there. But I think the Bucks are at the front of the line.
The Bucks are number one. The Bucks fired their coach at 30-13, and they traded away Drew Holiday last fall to get Damian Lillard. They fired Mike Budenholzer after losing in the first round. They are the number one pressure team. They did all that stuff to win a championship.
So they fired their coach at 30-13 and are sub .500 since then.
Yes.
Yes.
And they were 19th in defense when he got fired, and they're 15th since. The move hasn't worked.
Well, and look, it really, the big picture thing here is they have bent over backwards and burned all their assets to try to please Giannis. And there's not much to be happy about right now.
No. And there's not a lot left to do. I mean, this is what they've got.
The unanswerable question is, if they go out in the first round with Giannis missing a big chunk of it with injury, what does that mean? And I'm not expecting you to give an answer right now.
Yeah.
But, you know,
to me personally, it doesn't matter because, again, if you look at the 82 games, this team isn't good enough. Like, it's sort of the same discussion we had about the Warriors earlier. They're obviously a little bit better version of it because Giannis is still a top five player in the league at this point. I mean, he's the first player ever to average 30 a game and shoot 60% from the field. He obviously had an incredible season, but this team isn't good enough. I mean, they're just not. Like, their defense is not good enough. They might be able to talent their way through if Giannis gets healthy, but they have too many significant flaws, and they don't have obvious ways to fix them. Like, it just doesn't look great.
Well, the one thing they have going for them is there's no such thing as failure. Getting down from the first round is just a step towards success.
Well, maybe we'll have a reprisal. We'll see. But that series is going to be interesting, and this time off for Tyrese Haliburton, that game one, I'm going to be really curious to see if he looks like he's got some pop. Because if he does and they're flying around, it's a tricky matchup for Milwaukee.
Well, I agree with McMahon. I think how Dame looks and feels is big. And if he goes into that series and says, okay, I got to start putting up 40-point games because they're just going to need points because you know they're not going to be able to defend and you know that they're going to get attacked and transition. You know, it's not like this guy's 5 years removed from playoff greatness. The guy can still do it.
Several days off here is what he needs to get back to being, you know, the guy that we've seen for years, but we haven't seen him for weeks.
Well, and I think the key, I mean, we're talking a lot about a series that starts Sunday, but the key to that series to me, maybe the main one, especially if Giannis is banged up, is Aaron Nesmith versus Chris Middleton. Because if Aaron Nesmith, who has had a really nice revival of his career since getting traded to Indiana, if he can lock up Chris Middleton and not let him get going, there's not a lot else on that Milwaukee offense besides Dame going off at that point. Like they now they really need Middleton to get going. And if Nesmith can keep him throttled down, that's sort of a smaller thing to watch in that series too.
All right, before we go, Bontemps, I want to talk a little bit about the playing
game. The game tonight.
That you're going to face tonight. Yes, tonight. Where we're going to, you know, Embiid is listed on the injury report as questionable, but expecting him to play.
All signs point to him playing unless there's some setback between now and tip.
The Sixers are not a 7 seed when they've had Embiid this year. I don't know exactly how their record right in front of me, but
they are 31-8 when he plays.
That's pretty good.
So that is not a 7 seed.
On pace to have a better record than the Celtics.
Oh, wow. That's a good number. I'm going to steal that for TV
65,
tomorrow.
65 win pace.
Let me write that down. I'm going to steal that for TV tomorrow like I steal all your stuff.
That's true. You do.
So
okay, because Bontem steals it from other sources.
Yeah. we're all stealing from anonymous. Stats Williams if you want the honest opinion. I'm fascinated to see what the Heat bring in this game, because we know their history, and I'm fascinated if we get a Celtic or a 76ers Knicks series. Potentially could be super interesting series. To me, I know there's so much focus on the West because everybody wants to, you know, bury the Warriors and do whatever to the Lakers. But this to me is the crown jewel of the play-in this week, this game. And so, Bontemps, what are you gearing up for in that one?
Well, look, I mean, this game, either a team's going to have a chance to make the East Finals or a team's going home in the next 2 weeks, right? Like, if you lose this game on Wednesday, sure, whoever wins Friday is going to think they have a chance to beat Boston. It's going to take something miraculous to beat the Celtics over 7 games for anybody in the East. Like, they've just been clearly better than everybody else. But if you win this game, you get into this other side of the bracket. We just spent all this time talking about Milwaukee and Indiana. Neither one of them are terrifying. The Knicks have had a fantastic season. I'm not saying whoever wins this game, especially if it's Philly, is going to walk all over the Knicks, but Julius Randle isn't playing. Philly will go into that series as it's probably a toss-up series. They win that series, they're going to be favored to make the conference finals. So it is a massive, massive game. You've obviously got Joel Embiid's playoff history. He's healthy now. He's averaged, I mean, I know he had the little bit of a knee thing on Friday, but in 5 games, the guy's averaged 39-5 since coming back from this knee thing and missing 2 months. It's not quite the 35 points a game he was doing before that, but he's looked damn good. And if they can win this game, get a couple more days off going into Saturday, they got a chance to do something here. And then for Miami, we've hinted at it a little bit, but look, Jimmy Butler's got 1 guaranteed year left on his contract. This is a team that's been in the lower half of the bracket for the last 5 years. Yes, they've had 3 runs to the conference finals and beyond, but they've got some decisions coming this summer on what's going to happen there. And I think a lot of it's going to be dictated by what happens over the next few weeks. And it's easy to forget, and we've talked about it before, the Heat were a couple minutes away from not even making it to the playoffs last year. And it was that close against Chicago to being done. So maybe they're going to summon it tomorrow and Jimmy Butler is going to summon it and they'll win this game. And again, Miami playing the Knicks would be a fascinating series. It'd be super fun to watch. But these guys had 3 games on their racket, the Dallas game, the Indiana game, the Philly game. They win any of those games, they're the 5 seed in the East. Instead, they're the 8 seed. And Jimmy Butler did not get it done down the stretch in any of those games. So massive stakes on both sides. And if Joel Embiid is going tomorrow, to me, Philly's clearly the better team. They should come out on top at home and win the game.
Yeah. All right.
Ready to talk Hawks Bulls?
Nope. Kobe White, I had him second on most.
We will talk about the winner of Hawks Bulls,
by the way,
on Friday.
Most improved ballot. I had to fill out our ballots today. Most improved ballot. There were some guys on there that played over 65 games that I couldn't vote for.
Oh, yeah. The NBA's got to fix that. That's not the spirit of the freaking rule. Dante DiVincenzo played 81 games.
He played 2,300 minutes.
I don't care how many
minutes to qualify for the Bulls. So did Isaiah Hartenstein. Tibbs needs to play his guys more minutes. That's the lesson.
Yeah, right. I mean,
Tibbs is not playing guys enough minutes. Like, shame on you, Tibbs.
Played 74 games just because Steve Kerr yanked him early when he should have been playing more. He's not eligible. Come on. The NBA has got to fix that. That's honestly.
No, seriously, Kuminga, I thought I was having a brain fart. I was like, because I was going to put Kuminga third on the line.
You're like, hold on, that's how he spells it, right?
I'm like, why can't I find Kuminga in here? And I went and looked at his stats, and it said he played 74 games. And I'm like,
why isn't he here? That's a complete embarrassment. That is not what that rule is supposed to protect against. Like, I'm sorry. If a guy plays 67 games and a couple of them, that's one thing. If he's playing 74, 81, we don't need to worry about how many minutes he played in each game. That's ridiculous.
Look, like, the rule is a dumb rule. If you're going to have the rule, have it for MVP and have it for first team All-NBA and don't have it for anything else. Like, what are we doing? Like, it's a ridiculous rule in the first place, but those are the only things it should be for. The fact that it's for most improved player is insane.
Yeah. Well, like, I don't think he was going to make the team, but like the Trailblazers organized an entire campaign for Matisse Thybulle for all defense.
Sums up the Portland Trailblazers season, I thought.
That's true. And then realized he wasn't eligible, even though he'd played over 65 games because he had, you know, not enough minutes. So even the teams are coming to understand the way this rule is portrayed. So
you guys stick with your straw poll MVP ballots?
I did.
I didn't vote.
Brunson fifth instead of Sabonis. Jalen Brunson was fifth on my MVP ballot.
He was fifth on mine. Mine was Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, Shea, Giannis, and Jalen Brunson, which was also my first All-NBA team.
Yes, I had Luka third and Shea second, but that was also my first team All-NBA.
You can still eat at Nick and Sam's with me, I think.
What's that?
I said you can still eat at Nick and Sam's when you come to town with me.
Well, you know, like...
You just can't get the Luka, the 77-ounce steak. You're not allowed.
Well, if there was someone who's going to make a late push, it would be the fact that, you know, the Thunder and Shea won the number one seat.
I was in Oklahoma City. Trust me, I've heard all about it.
Yeah, I know you have. Also the ballots arrived at 2 a.m. and we had till 6 to file it. I was like, whoa.
6 p.m.
6 p.m. Sorry. Yeah, 6 p.m.
Really interrupting the Windy Sleep update.
Well, the ballots had to wait to be delivered. Usually used to be they would come out before the season ended and you would have them be filed by the end of the day Monday, usually by midnight, I think. And they got sent out later because the NBA had to wait and make sure there were no challenges to the rule were all taken care of, I think, in time before they actually said, here's the official ballot. So that was what led to the delay.
It is kind of interesting, though. We'll see if it makes any... Comparing it to the straw poll will be interesting because in previous years, people would start voting before the actual end of the season. And
I don't think very many people did that. I think the vast majority of people, I think, voted.
Yes, but on the last day of the year, the Thunder secured the number one seed. So it's possible that Shea may have picked up some votes. I know that there was...
Also, those Provi MVP billboards came out after the straw poll. So
that's right.
Cuban tweeted a lot. So,
yeah. You know.
I'll be curious to see if Luka or Shea gets second. I think that's where the drama will be.
Yeah.
All very deserving, but only one can win.
Yeah.
Also true.
We'll talk about that when they start getting announced. Okay. Thank you for listening and watching the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to McMahon and Bontemps. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. And we will be talking to you later this week.
Adios, amigos.